Hi, it's Rob Brown here with the Accounting Influencers podcast. We're doing another in a series of international panels with very influential people that care and are passionate about accounting and the tech that surrounds it. So we're talking about the future of accounting, and we are here to bust some myths and right some wrongs and set the record straight and maybe give a little bit of a hint of direction of travel and what is shaping the accounting profession. We have a very prestigious panel today from all shores of the world. I'm going to get them to introduce themselves in just a moment, but we are here to talk about the change that is happening, the challenges, the opportunities, what's good, what's bad. What we know is that we cannot afford to just let the future react to accounting and let accounting react to the future. We are in the midst of huge change. So we're going to ask a range of questions. And Jennifer Wilson, I'll start with you. Would you give us a little introduction and a warm welcome to the show?
Hey, thanks, Rob. I'm glad to be here. I'm Jennifer Wilson, a Convergence Coaching founder and partner, and we're a leadership and management consulting firm who focuses on helping develop transformed people and transformed firms inside the accounting profession, as well as working with associations. And I have an interesting side gig right now. I am the independent facilitator for the National Pipeline Advisory Group, a group of 22 very diverse stakeholders who are building a national pipeline strategy to grow the number of people who come into the profession of accounting. So I'm kind of steeped on the talent side pretty much right now.
That's great to hear that, Jennifer. We're interviewing Lexi Kessler and Sue Coffey, who are on that pipeline advisory group, on this show in a few weeks to talk about what they're finding and the group that they put together. So yeah, really interesting. So David Cieslak, good to have you with us, sir. A little introduction from you.
Rob, thank you so much. So David Cieslak, I'm the chief cloud officer for a company called RKL Solutions, a long time in the space. Got my start at Pricewaterhouse many moons ago. So I'm a CPA by background, but really have spent most of my career in the mid-market accounting software space. So thinking about my co-panelists here, I'm probably the tech-heavy person in the room. That's all good. But really just very much attuned to, you know, what's going on in the profession. I'm passionate about staying connected and, you know, thinking about where we're going directionally. So excited to be a part of the panel. So thank you very much for the invite.
Well, don't geek and nerd out on us too much, David. I've never heard such a glamorous job title as chief cloud officer. That is a CXO role to die for, isn't it? Did you make that up?
I did. It's completely contrived, but I thought, you know, what could explain, you know, what my role should be and where organizations should be focused. I thought, you know what, it is all about the cloud.
That's so cool. I had a stat the other day that 10 years ago, the jobs that people wanted, 80% of them are not doing those jobs right now because the jobs they're doing now were never invented 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, we wouldn't have ever dreamed of a chief cloud officer, but you've made it your own. That's brilliant. Jennifer Warrow, we're lovely to have you with us. We've had you on the show a few times. Please give an introduction to the world so that they know who you are.
Thank you so much, Rob, and thanks for having me here with this great group. Jennifer Warrawa, I have been in the accounting profession for over 25 years, so I don't even know when I was adding that up the other day. I was like, oh my gosh, am I that old already? But anyways, we'll leave that aside. I currently work with QuickFee, heading up their North American business, and we help accounting firms get paid faster and automate their bill-to-cash workflow. I'm really passionate, since I'm sharing what they're passionate about, you know, I'm really passionate about adding value and building trust. And I think when you add value and you build trust, that's where the foundation of business starts. So I'd say that's how we try and enter all of our relationships. So thanks for having me here.
Fantastic. MSCF, I know you as Emma Crawford Follicono. So I can't pronounce that. You taught me how to do it, Emma. Lovely to have you with us. Give us a little introduction.
Thanks, Rob. And you always blow me away with your pronunciation. So very impressed. Hey, everyone. Emma Crawford Follicono. I am the divisional director at Iris Software Group. For those who are listening that don't know who Iris are, we're a leading global provider of mission critical software and services in the accounting, payroll, HR and the education space. A little bit like David, I started my career in the accountancy industry. I am a trained chartered accountant. I have escaped that, though, and spent the last 15 years in the software side. So, David, I'll see your tech input and I'll raise you.
You're on.
That's great. Well, I put the first question in the Zoom chat for you all, if you are looking in Zoom chat, but I'm going to ask you all, and David, I'm going to ask you to kick off for this one. Here's the question. As technology regulations and business models evolve rapidly, who bears the responsibility of making sure the accounting profession stays ahead of the curve and ready for what's next? So you kick us off with that one, David. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And I would say, you know, it's ultimately it's a group effort. And so to single out, you know, any one constituency, you know, whether it be, you know, the profession itself, regulators, you know, the academia, I think, you know, places in too much maybe emphasis on one versus the role of the others. So I would say, you know, definitely a combined responsibility, but it's really, you know, to me, it's all about, you know, inspiration, leadership, trying to understand, you know, where are the value opportunities, you know, for the profession, and really making certain that then, you know, coordinating, you know, collectively, you know, we are in fact leading and, you know, not chasing the ball. You know, that we all know the adage, you're not a leader if no one's following. So, you know, really, do we have, you know, clarity on what we think is the path forward? Is definitely it's front and center for everybody right now, especially within the profession, as it should be. And, you know, are we in fact, you know, truly taking a leadership role?
Jen Wilson, they say accountants are like cockroaches. They can survive anything, any recession, any economic developments. They will be around in thousands of years as they have been. But we're asking the question, who is responsible for making sure they stay ahead of the curve and ready for what's next? What are your views on that?
So if I have to pin somebody down, I'm going to pin down the individual, the every person. And, you know, I think we all own it. Every individual in the profession, and really we all own all the options and issues of our profession. Everybody's always looking for somebody to sort of lay responsibility or blame at the feet of, whether it's an you know, a national association or a stakeholder group. We're like, those people should do it. You know, and you could say on technology, well, the IT people within employers should be leading this. Or, you know, we could pick a group, but I just view it as if we want to keep our saw sharp, if we want to really lead, we have to individually evaluate technology and read and stay current and learn. I have been telling people, I don't care if you retire tomorrow, you've got to learn AI. You have to learn GPT for sure. Because you're going to have to use it in retirement. I mean, it's not an option. And so I just think it's every person to evaluate the technologies and bring them forward to their employers or to their academic groups or to their associations and say, hey, we really need content around this. We really need learning. We need business process around it. I don't think we should pin it on any one group.
We're not looking to apportion blame here, but it's that old adage, if everyone thinks it's everyone else's job to drive forward the profession, everyone leaves it to everyone else. Jennifer, what do you think?
Well, unfortunately, I agree with Jennifer and David, so that's going to make my answer a little bit more challenging because I'm like, they got it spot on. I mean, I think that, you know, I think of this responsibility the same way I think about building a brand. It's not marketing's responsibility to build a brand in the organization. Everyone in the organization builds the brand. When you think about HR, or culture. Sometimes people say, well, HR is responsible for culture. Everyone's responsible for culture. It's no different in the accounting profession. Who's responsible for driving it forward? Everyone. The point that I'd call out is who in the firm, when I look for, is who's holding it back? Because I think that you can have a lot of people driving it forward, but sometimes what we'll see is everyone's on board with moving ahead, except for one person or two people that are like, I'm going to be a holdout until retirement, and then you can move this forward. But I don't want to be part of all of this change. And I've only got 3 years left, so can you wait until I'm gone, kind of thing. And so I'm, you know, often we'll find in a firm a lot of people that want to advance and want to do things differently, but there's someone that's holding them back. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of engaged people that want to move forward. I'm very interested in who doesn't want to move forward and how do you help them on that journey.
You probably just called out 75% of the profession that are at or near retirement.
They're probably not listening. They're probably not listening to your webcast anyway. So we're fine. That's good. Okay. They won't even be listening.
That's terrific. What about you, Emma? What are your views on who's responsible for driving things forward?
Look, I can't argue with what everyone said. It's definitely a shared responsibility across various stakeholders. But I think if I was to add on to what everyone said, one area that we haven't really called out in that discussion so far is the technology providers. So for me, it is, you know, crucial that companies are developing that tech and accounting software, that they need to be shaping that profession. And they need to be doing that by collaborating with the accounting professionals to understand needs, understand how to develop the tools in the best way that's going to put everyone with their best foot forward looking into the future. We also didn't mention the clients themselves either. So I think there's also onus of making sure that clients give us enough feedback and we're accepting that feedback too, to make sure that we're going to be future-proofing ourselves to be able to deliver the services and the value that they need in the future.
When I ask people what the biggest challenges are for accountants or who's going to eat the accountant's lunch, there are lots of ways to frame that. One of the biggest challenges is complacency, or I've heard it termed as the fight for relevance. So I'm going to ask you this question. I'm just putting it in the Zoom chat right now so you can have a little think about it. For our audience watching this, then, these questions are fresh. Our audience have prepared generally around the future of accounting, but these questions are pretty direct and focused, and we're throwing them at our audience, at our panelists, to get the very best insights, but intuitive answers. So we're asking now, in an era of rapid change, what are the key skills and mindsets, I've thrown that in there, that will allow accounting professionals to stay relevant, indispensable, competitive? And before you jump off on this, and David, I'm going to get you to start on this one. Let's not all jump on the AI and tech boat. I've ruined your answer, David, haven't I? Just because of this stat. This came out from Xero recently that said that only 31% of accountants automate a bank feed. So if we accept that many accountants are still in shoeboxes and Excel spreadsheets, there are some, Jennifer's nodding her head, shaking her head, that some are in shoeboxes and spreadsheets and not in the AI route, and it's not really touching them. Now, if you want to argue different to that, go ahead. But we're asking, what are the skills and mindsets needed to keep accounting professionals relevant? David, what would you say?
So great question. And just thinking about, you know, how accountants, you know, approach their day jobs today versus, you know, historically how that's evolved. I would say, you know, it's really a mindset of continuous learning. And so, you know, as was just kind of shared a few moments ago, you know, even if you're retiring, ChatGPT, you know, AI is not optional. It's going to be, you know, table stakes, you know, for all of us in our daily lives. And that's absolutely, you know, spot on. So, but I think of, you know, continuous learning, but I also think of specialization. And I think, you know, we are somewhat tortured right now with this notion that, and maybe it's kind of, it's really kind of similar to maybe what other professions have gone through as well. You know, large body of knowledge, I should understand it all. And, you know, we almost look to the individuals to master this, you know, massive, ever-growing, you know, body of knowledge, like that's going to bring value to, you know, their day job, what they might contribute to, you know, their organization, get to really contribute to their position. And so really, I think it's a combination of, you know, yes, technology, learning the tools, continuous learning, because as we all know, it's not just change, it's the rate of change. And so we don't have the option of being complacent and just saying I've done it this way for X number of years, you know. But as I said, it's really a matter of just saying, you know, what are areas where I can add focus. So when we think about the role of specialties or specialization, I really think that's the tip of the, you know, the tip of the knife right now.
Emma, I'm going to come to you now with the same question. While I let Jennifer Wilson load her rifle with all the barrels and bullets she's got to come at me about AI, but what skills do you think keep accountants relevant, Emma?
So, hey, look, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but actually, David, you have stolen the two that I actually pre-prepared for this. But I think for me, when I'm looking at from a skill perspective, I think we need to really be able to push that whole problem solving and agile approach within the accountancy industry. I think the ability to identify, analyze, solve complex accounting issues and challenges and seeing what's coming around the corner is more crucial than ever as our time is freed up by automation and AI and everything else that we on this call and people who are listening are aware of. So I think being able to be agile and be able to really be focused on problem solving is crucial for anyone to succeed moving forward. And then as a mindset piece of I guess that you asked about mindset and skill set. Mindset for me, it's all about client focus. Like I feel like in the profession, in the industry, over maybe the last probably 5 years, as we've gone through this rapid rate of digitalization, we sometimes forget that it is all about the client, and the client is really the cornerstone of any accounting firm. Without the small businesses and the larger businesses as well, and tier one firms and mid-tier firms, we wouldn't have a job to do. So we need to be really agile and understand it's not just around us as an industry. We need to be really on top of what our client focus is. Are we client-centric in everything that we do? Are we making our clients' lives easier through the use of technology and through our skill set of being able to problem solve for them?
Jim Wilson, you've been consulting to probably some of the most progressive firms that are hungry. They do want to push on. They are at the bleeding edge. So I would imagine they're more advanced than most on skills and mindset. But have at it then. What have you got for us on this question?
Well, I'm going to probably only focus on mindset because I don't think anything else matters if the culture and the mental frame of the leaders is not where it needs to be. Then you can have the best technology and the best processes, but you aren't going to have the motivation of the people. So I'm going to always pick, you know, fall back into my number one most important leadership attribute of any organization that's really committed to be relevant and sustainable and future proof. And that's generosity. I really think that the leaders have to be willing to build something for the future, which means they're not in it. And it means that they don't know the answers and they have to put their palms up and find out from their people what they want and from their clients, like Emma said. And Emma, I kind of, I call them employers. You know, they're the firms, the channel, if you will, and the clients. They're called employers to me. And that's our term. And it's all of that. And nobody wants to work for selfish leaders. And I think we talk about complacency and we could talk about sort of lagging. I'm going to tell you, I think it's maximizing wealth that gets firms in trouble. We're making more money than we've ever made before at the firm level. And, you know, they have a, it's not broken, let's not fix it kind of mentality. So we got to put selfish interests aside and generously invest in the future. We have to have humility and curiosity because we have to realize we don't know the answers. And that means putting bias aside and putting I already know aside and really, truly collaborating with clients and with team members, listening to team members, focus grouping, forums, asking them what they want, what they see, and then investing in those visions. Hard because, you know, a lot of leaders today have a father or mother knows best kind of way of leading. And so they don't listen and they're not trying to build something that the young people want. And I think that's probably our biggest challenge.
Jennifer, what were your thoughts?
Well, it's really hard to top generosity. That's a pretty good, I mean, that's a pretty good noble cause for sure. I think, I'll go back to, we're helping firms automate their bill to cash workflow and take digital payments. I remember I was at a CPA conference and I was talking to a partner in a firm and they only accept checks. So we were just talking about how they get paid and they said, yeah, we only accept checks. And I'm like, have you looked at digital payments? Like, are you thinking about that? And he said, you know what? Our clients just aren't asking for it and they don't want it. And I will always remember that moment because it was like, does all innovation come from somebody telling you what it is they want you to do? And I think that is the opposite of it, right? So I think when you think about anticipating needs of your clients and that client centricity, how do you anticipate what they're going to need in the future and how do you deliver that to them? And it takes, you know, there's some magic eight ball part of it because you don't know exactly what they're going to need in the future, but you don't want to wait for them to tell you what they need. It's too late at that point. And so I think it's just looking at what other firms are doing. We see a lot of great conversations like this or a lot of peer networking where people are learning from each other, which is good, but have those open-ended conversations. Look at what everyone else is doing, get ideas, but don't wait for your customers to tell you what they need. And you'll often find what they need when they tell you, I'm moving to another firm because they are able to provide me with this. And I've never heard you even talk about that. And that's an unfortunate time to learn that you don't have what they need. So I think looking ahead, anticipating what's going to add value and figuring out how you can deliver that in your firm.
We've just launched a new podcast called Accounting Answers. We asked 111 people, one or two of you here were involved in this, the same five questions. Question one was, will the next generation of accountants be any different from their predecessors? Question two was, are business owners any closer to receiving proactive advice from accountants? And this speaks to that a little bit in that accountants often are not proactive enough to go out there, are not programmed to ask questions. They're programmed to give the answers and the very correct answers. And clients often don't know what to ask for. They don't know what advisory is often. They don't know what else an accountant can do for them. So let's just park that for the moment. It is an ongoing debate. I want to go with silver bullets. I want to go with what's taking the eye off the ball. I put this into Zoom chat and I'll read it out for our audience here. Fads, silver bullets, billable hours, shiny tech, things like, and this is not a definitive list, ESG, M&A, DEI, crypto, AI, blockchain. They're all shouted out as the next best thing and something accountants must be aware of, must deep dive with, must master. I've even heard people say, if accountants don't master coding, they're going to be obsolete. Now, there's a cutting edge of things like that, and some accountants will be on that. But I'm just asking you now, what are the red herrings? What are the silver bullets? What are the equivalents of these that, whilst they're not unimportant, they're not critical? So Jennifer Warren, I'm going to start with you on this one. What do you think might be taking our eye off the ball? Urgent, but perhaps not important.
I feel, wow, it is such an overwhelming time, I think, in the accounting profession. And I even think about 10 years ago, there were so many different trends and so much changing, and whether it's technology or the structure of a firm. But now it's exponentially more than that. There's a lot going on in the profession. So I'd say probably at the top of the list for me is the Me Too, fear of missing out. Everyone's doing it. I need to get in on it. And I feel like there's a lot of people that are like, oh man, I need to figure out what my AI strategy is right now because everyone's doing it. Or my competitors are starting to, they're talking about cryptocurrency and I'm not into cryptocurrency. And just there's a lot of noise in the system. And I think firms spend more time looking at what everyone else is doing and trying to figure out how to Me Too versus figuring out their own IP and what makes them unique and different and what brings value to their clients that other people aren't doing. And so I think from all of these shiny objects out there, it's like in that world of distraction of shiny objects, what makes you great and what makes you unique and why should someone want to work with you and focus on that versus trying to be all things to all people because everyone else is doing it.
Yeah. Emma, I'm coming to you next. Knowing you as I do, you've been a pioneer for women in accounting for a long time. You've got a strong DEI focus and you brought in awards and things like that. So understand me, I'm not decrying diversity, equity, inclusion as something that's not important, but you can see to Jennifer's point how we get distracted from with initiatives like this. So what would be your answer to the silver bullets and fads that perhaps take our eye off the ball?
Yeah, so I think for me, it's all around how people are actually understanding the things that you'd mentioned before, ESG, DEI in particular. Like that should be almost woven into what we are doing and we're more conscious of it. It doesn't necessarily mean you're taking the eye off the ball. The whole thing around DEI is actually the benefits bringing your company, your business, therefore your clients' businesses as well. So actually, it's not something that's distracting us because it is something that's really important. That we have studies to show that it hits the bottom line in a real positive way when you've got the right people in the room and the right people around the table. For me, I think one of the issues and why we're having this conversation, these questions out there around these silver bullets and fads is because of we have too much of this command and control mentality. If I was to take AI, for example, exactly as we were just talking about, people are like, oh God, well, so-and-so, my competitor over here has got this, or, my friend who's also in the same industry, they've got an AI strategy. Well, actually, do you need an AI strategy at that level at this point in time? Or do you just need to invest in the right people, the right technology, the right companies, the right vendors, the right people within your team that has some of that experience, or they're going to drive that piece for you? So I think it's very much around being aware and being able to identify what people are talking about that's going to make a real difference and impact your business, But at the same time as well, like, outsource things. Like, you don't have to be an ESG expert. There's ways that you can actually do your part, contribute, because it's actually hitting your bottom line in a positive way without taking on all of the responsibility yourself as a firm.
An associate of mine was recently asked by a lady in the firm in her mid-50s, does our firm have a menopause policy? Yeah. Now, that's a question to field, isn't it? So there are loads of things we need, and we can be as woke and aware as we like, but there are many things that perhaps might be less urgent than others. Jen Wilson, where do you stand on this? What's taking our eye off the ball?
Well,
what should we drop down the list?
Well, so first I want to just clarify, because to me, silver bullet means it solves it.
Okay.
And so to me, red herring is what I think you're asking me about, which is the stuff that takes our eye off the ball, or the lack of, you know, our focus comes off the main thing. And, you know, I think sometimes these red herrings are intentional. We don't want to work on the hard stuff. So we'll say, oh, regulation, new standards, we're up to our eyeballs in busy season, you know? So there's all this like regular process stuff in running the business that most people will use as the excuse not to be proactive and not to have vision. I am going to say my answer on this, besides that, is going to be something scary to say out loud for me, but I've been saying it, and I'm going to take a, you know, a hit from at least half the people in my country about it. But I think one of the things that's taken our eye off the ball is we have a staffing crisis in the U.S. and you have the same in Europe, and there, you know, North America has this issue, and other evolved or so-called rich countries. 61 out of 195 countries have this problem: a shrinking workforce from 25 to 64 years of age. And we don't, in the U.S., we don't have enough under 25-year-olds to solve that problem, while the over 65 population is growing at a rate of 13%. And what's going to happen in this country is that we're going to have a lot of older people that need a lot of care and no one to do it. A lot of medical care and a lot of just elder care. A lot of firms are really focused right now on solving their talent shortage by offshoring, which I am a supporter of. I am a big supporter of it. Non-traditional staffing strategies, I love them. But offshoring is a temporary fix. It is not the real big solution that we're going to need in our countries in order to fill seats, not just in the profession, but in our client organizations. Because one thing sometimes we think about is, gosh, I can't find people for my CPA firm or my technology firm. Well, hey, your clients can't find them either. And if they can't find them, they can't stay in business. And automation will help with some of it. But the other answer is immigration, because there are 130 some countries that are growing, and they're growing at that, you know, under 25 and the 25 to 64 year old band. And, you know what, if you follow the arc of history, the way a country, you know, starts to decline is they don't have the workforce. And so I think that's a big challenge for us. And I think we're very busy, like, working on what I'm going to call the small problems. And not talking about the big ones because of politics. I don't view immigration as a political issue. I view it as a simple math issue, and accountants are pretty good with math. So I just think we have to start sponsoring and really getting good at bringing in immigrants into our profession. And so I just think that's an example of something that takes it's a Band-Aid that doesn't solve the long-term challenge.
That's interesting insight. Just as a stat, there are only two continents where the over 25s are growing faster than the over 65s. One is South America and the other is Africa.
Yes.
Now, there are certain countries that book that trend, but generally in Europe, yes, you're absolutely right, Jen. We do have a massive problem here. It's getting more expensive to buy a house and get married and to have kids in those houses. So, but we could talk about that separately. David, I'm going to come to you on your answer. What do you feel is getting in the way?
Well, and I'm going to actually resurface something Jen shared a few moments ago, which just had to do with profitability. So when you talk about red herrings, you talk about what really slows us or prevents us from focusing on the important but not urgent. When we think about the four quadrants, It's just that we're so immersed in profitability and the drivers around that. And, you know, oftentimes the mindset when we think about some of these other things, whether it's ESG, DEI, crypto, you know, all the different, you know, Gartner technologies that we're talking about, it really is just, well, that's not, you know, important. And so I'm going to continue to attend to the urgent, and because gosh knows, you know, and from a profitability perspective, it's reward. So why should, you know, I focus on these things and not understanding really kind of, the way that these are going to be foundational to how we move forward, that these are not just tactical, these are strategic. So I look at it and I say, there's, it really does come down to what's your mindset of, you know, around some of these things and the impact that they, could have, on the organization going forward. And to the extent we don't, then fully expect, don't anticipate, expect some other firms are going to, you know, innovate right around us and we will be left as irrelevant. So it's either, you know, that, you know, we've maybe even seen the t-shirts, innovate or die. I mean, you know, it really comes down to, you know, are we, you know, going head first into these things that are not just fads, that they are in fact foundational, in trying to fully, you know, understand and then synthesize that into, you know, the roadmap of the organization.
Yeah. And Jen Wilson, you mentioned the political side of things there. I learned just this week that 60% of the world will vote this year on national government. 60% of the world have general presidential prime ministerial elections. That's going to shape the way the world is going, because as much as you want to get stuff done, if you've got massive changes in leadership in a country trying to push through policies and things like that, it's an absolute minefield. So there's definitely going to be a shakeup, that's for sure. Let's pivot to the people side of things. I want to ask you about the global and the hybrid world that we're in right now, the remote world, the working from home. So the question is, and Jennifer Warwell, I'll start with you on this one, remote work, globalized teams, an increasingly borderless business world, and now priorities. So how prepared is the accounting and tech world to operate in this new decentralized paradigm? Or you might say it won't deal with it. The solution is to get everyone back in the office. So you go with that wherever you like, Jennifer.
Yeah, I feel like this is a little bit of a political topic too. Because there's very diverse opinions. You know, I'd say one thing that has been, I think, is good around being able to have people working remotely is that it opens up the world for people that are remote to get great jobs and have a realm of employment opportunities that they didn't have before. I also think it makes the competitive landscape a lot more interesting. So typically, you know, a number of years ago, I think when I had my firm, being local was really important. Like they wanted you to come in, you'd meet with clients face to face. And now that, you know, your competitor could be across the country or in another country. And that really changes the competitive landscape and causes everyone to up their game, which ultimately when that happens, the clients win, right? So I think that, you know, I think that that is important to note. I do think that, you know, I think about the next generation and I think about how I learned and some of my most important lessons when I was in my early days of my career. And so much of what I learned was being surrounded by and immersed in great leadership and strong people and strong leaders. And I think, you know, I think if I was in my early 20s today and I was working remotely, how much I would miss. There's a lot to be gained from working remotely, but I just think about so many interactions and so much learning that I had that had to do with listening to conversations that I wasn't in, but they were happening in the office next to me or in a boardroom and the door was open. And just, so there's so much learning. So I think it's really complex to navigate. I think that, you know, you want people to be able to learn and you want them to be able to grow and you want to mentor them. And I think you can do some of that remotely, but I also want to make sure that remote work style still has them learning, I guess, through osmosis a little bit, is some of how I learned in the early days of my career. So I think that there's firms that are certainly saying, hey, we're all in, everyone's back in the office. There's other firms that are completely remote. I know for us, we opened up an office late last year. We said, hey, you can do hybrid work from home and work from the office, do 3 days, 2 days, whatever. We just want to be able to have a place that you can come to. Everyone's worked from the office every day since we opened it in September, not because we made them, but because they want to be here and they feel the energy and the excitement. And I've loved that. My preference is that we don't make people come in, that they come in because they really enjoy the experience that they're having. So you have to create a place that people want to go to. But yeah, I think it's a complex environment to navigate because it is political. There's some very strong opinions in this area.
Well, let's see if you've left anything for the other three panelists to say on that, Jennifer. That was very comprehensive. Emma, what are your thoughts on this?
I really do think it's a balance. Yes, there are the positives, there's the negatives, it is political. However, for me, one of the things I think that we are really prepared for now, and we've seen it happen in multiple accounting firms within the UK, also within my network in Australia and New Zealand as well, is by having this new kind of globalization and borderless ability to do business, accounting firms can more than ever now actually really target a niche area and really drive an ICP. And when I say that as an example, traditionally, there was a lot of benefit to having a local accountant to get to know your business. You can't then decipher as an accountant, or you can't change which businesses around you that can become your clients. What you can do now with this new landscape is actually say, do you know what? I just want to target, because of this is the way that my firm's running, I want to target low value, high volume clients, and I'm going to build a machine behind it. And it doesn't matter where that client is sitting globally. I can package and I can productize my services and make that machine efficient. And then that will give me the ability to actually grow and scale as well at speed and with some confidence. So I think the ability to actually switch out what a political thing to say, a traditionally maybe standard accounting firm might be at each different tier, now they can really specialize into an area or into a client base that they want to work with no borders, to be able to slow them down and to not minimize their total addressable market.
David, do you feel strongly about the hybrid back to work dynamic?
There's a lot of layers, I think, ultimately to this, issue, this question. I think there's a generational dimension to it and not just, political. I think it might be erroneous to kind of, wrap it all up conveniently. But I would say, the positives, are clear. And I think, Jennifer Warma did a great job of articulating some of, the benefits, the opportunities, Emma as well. But I also think about some of, just what we get when we're face to face. We get serendipity, we get mentoring. There's a number of benefits that as yet, we struggle to reproduce that in a truly distributed, truly remote work environment. In not least of which is the sense of connection and belonging. When I'm sitting in, my four walls all day long, how much do I really feel a part of my team? Do I feel connected? And I know this is, Jennifer Wilson, probably lives her day, teed up around this question, constantly. So I'm looking forward to her answer. But like I said, to the extent that we're challenged to reproduce, some of the benefits and some of, and they're real and significant, the creative aspect of getting together, face to face. And so when we talk about where should we be spending time and energy, if we're committed to a remote work model, we need to make sure we're as committed how do we create this sense of connection and give, an opportunity, really create a place where serendipity and mentoring and some of these other critical things can take place.
Yeah. Jen Wilson, what's the answer in your eyes?
Well, I run a completely hybrid, remote, flexible, unlimited PTO business for 24 years. And I was one of BDO's very first remote partners before that. Living in Nebraska, Detroit-based, I'm a massive proponent of borderless reach for talent, for clients, completely distributed workforce, which doesn't mean I'm not a massive proponent for the occasional face-to-face meetings. I am a believer in the love and the fun and the connection that can come from those face-to-face meetings. I couldn't be more against mandates. Gartner just published a survey in the last month that talked about talent's reaction to mandates, RTO mandates. And you said return to work. And that's like a toothpick up my nose because we've been working the whole dang time. Yeah. Return to office, RTO, right? But people say, we got to get back to work. You got to get in the office. And that nothing could be more offensive to the talent who are like, hey, man, during the pandemic, when I worked at home every day, I worked every day. You know what I mean? Like, that was nuts, guys. I've been working. So mandates, Gartner showed that 16% of their highest potential employees of the survey respondents were more likely to leave the firm because of the mandates, you know, and it was like 10% of women and 11% of next-gen talent all responded negatively and said, I'm going to leave because of these mandates. So why would we do that? You know, why would we do that? And I think we have to change the way we think about everything. Jennifer W. There, you talked about how it was when you came up, and I love that nostalgia. I do, but nostalgia is sweeter than it was. You know, intentionality and learning. It shouldn't be osmosis. It shouldn't be accidental. I shouldn't have to eavesdrop to learn. You know, we should be intentional. We should have, and we built those mechanisms, and we teach people how to, you know, do learning and how to develop relationships and how to do regular check-ins and have water cooler feelings in a remote setting, and yet still also come back together in person. Yeah. It's not to say never in person, but to mandate it. My sister-in-law, I was with her recently in New York, driving over the bridge from Sloatsburg. She pays a $16 toll each way every day. Let me just tell you, she liked it when she didn't pay that toll during the pandemic. She liked it a lot. And her
more ways than one.
Her organization, which is a CPA firm, doesn't pay the tolls, you know, or the parking or any of that stuff. And so, you know, she started making less when she was RTO'd. And that's not a winning formula for talent. And so anyway, I have strong feelings about it. I think that anybody who's really doing it is doing it, again, selfishly, because it's easier for me as the leader. And it's because the way I always did it, and I don't really want to learn how to do it differently. So you come on into me and then we can run a better business instead of I'm going to learn how to do it differently.
Yes. And if I was cynical, I might say it's the leaders with the nice collar offices and the houses closest to the office and the shortest commutes that are mandating people to come back to work, maybe a bit of command and control. I want to throw this answer in real quick before I ask you for you two surefire predictions. Public trust in institutions has eroded, whether it's government, the education services, the justice system. I'm asking, what can accountants and their professional bodies and associations do to reaffirm their critical role as ethical stewards and guardians of financial integrity, the brand of the profession? So it's a big, deep question. I appreciate that. But I'm going to ask for some short, quick answers. If you've got any strong views about it, the professional bodies, maybe the accountants themselves. We do ask if accounting has a brand or image problem, speaks to talent, the attractiveness of it as a profession. Jen Wilson, let's kick off with you on this one.
Well, I would love to see the associations and the professional organizations that support any profession to be more unified, maybe more collaborative with one another, less competitive, perhaps. I would love to see them be way more transparent. I think sometimes, and in any, not just the accounting profession, in any profession, I think the associations and the leading bodies have a feeling like they have to pretend like they know the answers. They have to bake it fully. Their press release needs to be super measured or whatever. And I think it's okay to hold public forums where you, you know, discuss the complexity of issues and the options and debate them and be transparent about how difficult these decisions are, and not act like you know everything. And if more leaders acted, that's that humility I talked about earlier. If more of us were curious and humble and transparent and asked people for input and really seemed like we were listening and learning, I think there would be infinitely more trust in our different institutions. I really do.
Jennifer Warwood, there was a survey done recently that asked who are the most trusted professions in the world. And the obvious ones like nurses, teachers came at the top. Accountants came kind of where realtors are, estate agents. They were way down the list. Goodness knows why, but trust in the profession, governing bodies, professional associations. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think the part guardians of financial integrity is really interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, I think the accounting profession is known as, well, should be mostly known as, a little say where they rank on that list, that's a little bit concerning, but, you know, known as a trusted source to be able to go to, you know, you think about compliance and regulatory change and people count on their CPA firm to make sure that they're doing things in the right way.
I think it was some of the scandals, Jennifer, and the audit scandals that had brought that reputation down as a profession.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think at the end of the day, like every profession, it's how do you make sure that you build relationships on trust? And I talked about that a little bit at the beginning. And I think that, you know, I think that every profession has something where there's a black sheep or someone that's kind of wrecked it for everybody else. I think we do foster parenting, and I can't tell you the number of times where people are like, oh, foster parents are the worst. They take advantage. And it's just like, oh my goodness. And I think you get painted with this broad brush of all the bad things that happen in foster homes. And I look at it totally differently. I think that, you know, it's kind of like the government. You can't let the associations and the professional bodies be the ones that are going to always, you can't look to them and trust that they're going to uphold the integrity of the entire profession. And I think it's up to every firm and everyone in the profession, everybody on this call, to continue to demonstrate that there are relationships built on trust and that the profession can be trusted. There's always going to be someone that wrecks it for everyone else or tries to wreck it for everyone else. But just, you know, lead by example and be the demonstration of what you wish everyone else would do.
David, you've been in this game a long time. You've seen trends and brands come and go and accountants in favor and out of favor. What do you think about the brand of the profession?
Well, you know, when we think about the moniker, at least here in the States, of, you know, the CPAs or, you know, trusted advisors, you know, are we? And so into, you know, really, you know, the points that have already been made, you know, maybe it's some bad actors, you know, some things that have, you know, happened that have really, you know, tarnished the brand somewhat. But it really does, you know, it's about each individual. And there has to be a sense that it's really, you know, a profession that's rooted in trust and integrity, that's in fact, you know, the overarching, you know, the most important thing as we, you know, interact and serve, you know, our client base. You know, there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And, you know, and they always say, you know, integrity is, you know, who you are when no one's looking. You know, so all the great little, you know, euphemisms and sayings, but, you know, the reality is it comes down to the individual, and we build this from, you know, rebuild this, or, you know, continue to fortify this, you know, daily and from the bottom up. It's all about the individuals. And if there's a sense that, you know, that they're self-dealing, self-serving, it really, quickly, erodes, you know, kind of the reputation for everyone. So, you know, definitely an area of concern, but I don't look to regulatory or, you know, agencies or institutions to, you know, ultimately, you know, address this or fix this. It has to happen at the individual level.
Emma, for you, who has the hands on the steering wheel of the brand, of the profession?
So it's interesting, right? So from my perspective, I think I like the fact that we brought up the competitiveness and the fact that a lot of these institutions are having, you know, they're money making machines in their own right. So actually, what is driving them to be doing what they're doing? For me, it's all around making sure that these professional bodies are giving people within our profession the right tools. So, you know, whether that is making sure that qualifications, certifications emphasize and really test that integrity, objectivity, independence, all of the things that we should be well known for and should be represented in our brand as accountants. Or it could be, you know, ongoing CPD. What is it that's actually testing that side of things rather than, okay, well, you need to stay up to date with X, Y, and Z that's going on? Are we evolving the ethical part of our training and our continuous development? The brand is an interesting one though, Rob. So even then, when we've been speaking, the fact that we've defaulted, like we're guessing or we're assuming that maybe some of the issues that have happened with the auditing, et cetera, that has been going on is the reason why it's brought it down. But if you think about it, how many out of the accounting profession actually do audits? But that's the way that we're perceived. Mm. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to go on around, okay, look, we have this amazing ability to globalize now. Accounting isn't about wearing a gray suit and having a briefcase. It doesn't mean if you go through an accounting qualification, you're going to be in a practice. Myself and David are obviously two just on this call straight away who kind of represent that and have done things internationally and jobs that there isn't a training process for. But by the fact that I started in the accounting industry, it gave me a stepping stone to all of these other careers and opportunities. And I think we really need to sing that. We need to shout that from the top of the houses to and top of the roofs to be able to say, look, accounting is not what you think it is when you look at a toddler's playbook on new jobs. You know, my first job, it's not a guy with a briefcase in a gray suit.
Yeah. If I was on the panel answering this question, part of the answer for me lies in the success stories and differences that accountants make don't get shouted about enough.
Yeah.
Accountants are so close to what they're doing. They do a great job and they do remarkable things, but it doesn't really get talked about. So the young generation coming through don't really get a grasp of how interesting it is as a career and how diverse. They have some sense that it's to do with numbers and they get chained to a desk for a few years in a dark room, crunching spreadsheets. And maybe somebody's responsible for that. But listen, we're coming to the top of the show. I want to ask you for your two surefire dead cert predictions for the accounting world over coming years. This is stuff that you would put your house on. So David, I'm sure you live in some palatial mansion somewhere. So there's a lot at stake for you here. What are you putting your money on? Top two predictions?
You know, to me, the top two would be technology. AI in particular is going to be hugely impactful in ways that we don't even envision yet. And, you know, the more I understand, learn and know about it, the more I'm convinced of that. So that's one. And then the other one is innovate or perish. Because honestly, at the end of the day, you know, the reality is we're all consultants. And what's our mindset? You know, how do we adapt to this changing world? And we either innovate or we retire. And that's really going to be kind of what everyone's going to be staring down the proverbial barrel of.
I've heard that put a different way. Innovate or somebody will do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So the private equity money coming in, the changing business models, absolutely, the new generation of accountants that love the tech and love work-life balance, they are going to drive change and people will become obsolete because they'll be at the mercy of this new wave coming through. Emma, what are your two top fire sure predictions that you'd bet all on black or all on red at the casino?
So if I was going to bet all up, like my house on it, for example, I would say something similar as in like, okay, looking at the talent gap and looking at technology, but I wanted to be really specific for this one. So I actually think
we like specifics. Accountants like specific. Oh. They like numbers. They like stats. So we can measure.
Yeah. So for me, a surefire bet that's not being spoken about too much, but I can see it bubbling away. And I think the opportunity there is the rise of remote auditing and assurance services. So actually the adoption of remote auditing, I think it will keep going. The advancements on technology, the platforms that are being created quite commonly now as well. I think that all of a sudden we're going to move away from our standard auditing and assurance work and we're going to digitalize that a lot more. The other piece I think for me is the increased, I guess, how would I put it? So it's international, increased regulatory scrutiny and compliance complexity. I think that is going to come into play, especially as we referred to before, the world's changing. We don't know what leaders of the world are going to be coming in. We know in the UK, obviously, months and months in advance of any fiscal changes. However, they are happening faster and faster if you compare it in the last 5 years over to the previous 10. Some countries are not in that state, actually, where they get that leading as well for big fiscal changes. So I think for me, it's being across that increased and regulatory scrutiny and complexity will be key as well.
Jennifer Warrow, are you a gambler? Are you going to, you got your crystal ball there? Do you know what's coming up for certain? What two things would you totally bet on?
It always makes it more fun when you're like, if I don't get it right, I'm not going to have a house to live in. So that certainly adds some complexity to the question. But I think, you know, I think if I had to bet on two things, one is around, I think there's going to be a cultural shift in the accounting profession. And there is hanging on to the way things were will not be tolerated. Like the culture has to change. And I think it's in some cases, in some firms, it's being pushed in and they're kind of being dragged into a new culture. But I think you just can't stay with the way things were. Like, I just don't think that is going to be tolerated anymore. And I think those firms will pay the price for that if they're not willing to change. I think the other one is, it is around technology. I think that we haven't seen anything yet. I think that we're just, you know, I think ChatGPT, so impactful on all of our day-to-days and the way that we work. And it's just over a year old. Like, I mean, we're not even into 2 years. And you think about what's coming and how fast it's coming. I think that we're just at the beginning. And I think that firms' success, you know, they're going to need to be able to figure out, how do I navigate all this technology and figure out what is the red herring and what do I really need to adopt that's going to contribute to my success. So I think technology plays a big role.
Jennifer Wilson, what have you got for us? What are you willing to put the house on?
Time is going to become so much less relevant. It already is, but firms don't realize it. The minute they offshored and outsourced and didn't put people's time into their time system for that work, pricing on time is ridiculous. Automation's going to make everything take less time, and you're not going to charge less for it, I hope. So I think that in the not too distant future, Ron Baker and Ed Kless and all the other people that we know that have been fighting against the timesheet will win that battle in any firm that's going to sustain, because they're not going to be able to base their business KPIs or their pricing or their go-to-market on time. It's just not going to work. That's one thing I can say. And then the other is, time is the great leveler. You know, we all get 365 times seven times, you know, whatever, or times 24 times whatever number of years you get. It's the great leveler. So all these baby boomers, all these should have, you know, back in the day kind of people, when I came up, this is why we should do it my way or the highway. And they're not all boomers are that way. But the ones that are you know, still leading command and control, they're all going to retire. And we're going to see some firms that are really progressive and transformative. And I tell young people all the time, you can build a firm that will give you joy, that you can be proud of, that you can love the work, you can love the clients, you can have a life. You can make great money, and your people can make great money, and your clients can be well served. It doesn't have to be the grind that was imagined in the past as the only way to do it. And I am so excited to see that and to help in any way I can to empower that, for sure.
Well, this has been terrific. Thank you all so much for your insights. I'm going to ask you in final 10 seconds. Emma, I'll start with you. Is this a good time to be in accounting?
Oh, yes. It's always a good time to be in accounting. Money makes the world go round, but actually there's so many exciting opportunities on the horizon.
Jennifer Warrow, a good time for you to be in this game?
I sure hope so. But yes, I think it's a great time. There's lots of change, there's lots of opportunity, and there's lots of time to take a leadership role. Everyone has the opportunity right now. It's anyone's game. So it's exciting.
Jennifer Wilson, what about you? Good time to be in accounting?
For sure. Yes, absolutely. It's the best time to be an accountant because of the innovation opportunities and because of the differentiation opportunities. And like I said, the potential that automation and other things will bring that allow us to build these firms that we love.
David T. Slack, you got a smile on your face. You'd rather be in this game than any other game?
There's never been a more exciting time to be in accounting than right now. And I would just say personally, never been a more rewarding time. So that's my two cents.
Amen to that. Thank you all so much. It's been a brilliant discussion. We really appreciate you sharing your passion and your insights today. Thank you.